Hello and welcome to the Spoon Carving Conversations podcast, where I talk to spoon carvers from around the world about how and why they carve spoons. I'm Simon Pooley, and in this episode, I talk to Lee John Phillips, an award-winning illustrator and talented spoon carver. His spoons have a unique and recognizable style, often with amazing chip carving decoration, which he attributes to his background as an illustrator. We talk about how he started, why he decided not to sell his spoons, AI, spoon and chip carving design, and more. I always admired his work, and I'm really happy that I got to learn more about Lee today, and I hope you enjoy listening. If you enjoy the podcast and want to support it, you can do so by giving it a review, telling others about it, or buying an Endless Possibilities t-shirt, designed by myself and with today's guest, Lee John Phillips. Thank you. Happy listening. Good one. Good morning, Lee. Thanks for joining me.
Morning, Sam. How are you doing?
Good. Good. Yeah. So, looking forward to having a bit of a chat about drawing, about spoons, creating, making stuff, all of those fun things. I've been following you for a while on Instagram and saw your spoons and straight away, these look good. These look nice. So I started following you probably from a couple of years ago now. And so, over Instagram, you learn a little bit about the people, as much as they're willing to share, kind of, you can make a bit of a picture.
Not at all.
Yeah. So what do I know about you? You're living in Wales. You've got a dog.
That's right. Yeah. Yep.
You're a creative director. You're an illustrator and a spoon carver.
Yep. That's pretty much sums it up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. I don't do much.
I don't know how it is, but were you living in a van or are you sometimes or how is that working?
Yeah. So I've got a little motorhome, which is kind of like, we use it for, just fun and enjoyment and escapism, but it's kind of part of my, my business is called Middle of Anyway. So it just means that I can teach remotely, or I can kind of illustrate remotely. I've got a course tomorrow, which is maybe an hour and a half away with a family, but it means that the motorhome is my kind of rolling studio. It's got a little awning so we can carve underneath it if it's raining. So yeah, it's quite kind of integral to my work, really, this little van. So yeah. It's great. It's been having that and the dog in my life as a freelancer has just been, completely life-changing.
Yeah.
So delightful. Absolutely delightful.
Yeah, to be able to take off like that, and just kind of be in different spaces and that could be very nice, but not full time. Now I talked to Riley and Oliver who were living full time out of a van, and they could get pretty tiring, right? In a tight little space. It wouldn't be for me. Like I know I could do it for a while, but full time living in a van would be a bit challenging.
That'd have challenges, yeah. It would.
Yeah.
Especially and with a dog in molting season.
Oh boy. Here all over the place. Food. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're living you're in Wales.
West Wales.
West Wales.
Yeah.
Did you grow up there?
I grew up in South Wales, but South East Wales. Mm-hmm. And then I sort of closer to Cardiff, so much closer to the English border. Okay. And then I went to university in Swansea, which is sort of just becoming sort of West Wales, and I've just migrated west ever since. It's a great place to be. We've got really lovely beaches, mountains, coastal walks. We've got the only kind of marine sort of national park in the UK, and it's a delightful place to be. Mm. It's really lovely. Yeah. I'm happy I landed.
Yeah. I'd love to make it over that way. It was kind of a plan for us as a family to like on holiday. I'm from New Zealand. I've been here in Germany and I want to go back to New Zealand's a long way, but then to go visit an English speaking country. So I've kind of had that in the back of my mind to go to the UK and spend a bit of time there. I don't know it so much, but from what I hear and see, could be nice.
Yeah. Wales. I'm probably biased, but we are the best country in the UK. Easy.
Oh, yeah. Might have to
head west. Yeah.
Cool. And so you're an illustrator, like, is that and a spoon carver? The illustrating came first, is that right? Like, you were doing that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've always drawn. That's the only thing I've ever wanted to do.
Yeah,
and you know, it was never even it wasn't a question in school or uni. It was always, you know, the end goal was to be a freelance illustrator. That was it. You know, yeah. I kind of blinkers on my whole kind of academic career. And so I've been doing it really for about 20 years, but I was juggling a full-time job as an art teacher and an illustrator for just over a decade.
Yeah.
Which was hard going, man, you know, because it was like having two full-time jobs. So, you know, I teach and then I come home and I'd work, and quite often I'd be up until 2-3 o'clock in the morning on kind of illustration projects, and then have to get up and you know, do a full day shift in the classroom, which is absolutely exhausting. So yeah, I managed to sack that off, and I've been 4 years now. 4 years I've been working freelance full time. And you wouldn't know it by looking at my Instagram, because it's mainly spoons and dogs. But like a lot of the illustration work I do, I can't, because of client confidentiality, I can't share a lot of the work that I do. So my 9-to-5 is illustration and design, and then the spoons. Then that's the, and it's not part of my job. So drawing, like I said, you know, it's something I've just loved forever. That's my first love. But since illustrating full time, I've lost the love for it. It's taken the kind of the shine off. And when, you know, when I come home after, you know, a long day in the studio, I don't want to draw just to wind down. Because it's like, you know, I don't want to do that same action and that same activity. And it's, you know, it's not good for my mind or my body. So I got in the transition between jobs, I had a little spot of depression, which was particularly horrid. And I thought, well, I made a spoon for my mum's birthday. And my first spoon, I've always like made or drawn or painted or something for a birthday. And I was like, God, after all this time, I think it was like after like 35 years or something, I was like, she's got to be bored of like, having another drawing. She's got to. So I was like, I'm going to mix her up a little bit. And I just started kind of, you know, just dipping into the spoon carving Instagram community. And I was like, oh yeah, let's give this a go. You know, it can't be that difficult. And I thought I did a nice job at the time, but you know, completely uneducated, rubbish tools, you know, seasoned chunk of wood from the firewood pile.
Yeah.
And it was an awful experience. and then I'd see people online going, yeah, this is the 6 spoons I made today. And I was and my mind took me like 4 days just to do this one scoop. But I didn't realize it just came around at exactly the time that I needed a creative hobby that wasn't drawing, because drawing was becoming my job. Mm-hmm. So it really did kind of, you know, save me. And then I, you know, people going, oh my God, that's a really lovely spoon. Can I buy it? And then you think, oh, that's really sweet. Oh my God. That's great. People like my work, of course. And then I realized that the same thing was happening with carving as happened with drawing, because it started becoming a job.
Yeah.
Or part of my job. I started to lose the love for that as well. And I was thinking, you know, I don't have the time for another hobby. So I was like, right, I really need to kind of ring fence this and keep this completely separate from my work. It's just for me. It's just for my own well-being and my own mind space, you know. And since making that decision to not sell, I felt anyway that my you know, that my spoons leveled up almost overnight and my love for it come back in waves. It was amazing. You know, just to remove it from my, you know, in air quotes, work.
So it's, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that was really important to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that happening. And when there's a different level of it too, right? With making stuff and selling, just making what you want and then offering what you've made to sell. Whereas like, no, I'm making stuff to sell, right? Did you, when you started out, you saw there was a kind of market for it, selling it. So were you going to markets and actually carving with the idea of selling at the start?
Sorry. I did a couple of those. And I found that in that kind of environment, people were, they say wooden spoon is a market. They're like, I'll give you a fiver for it.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, well, absolutely not. This is taking me so long. I was at a festival and I'd made a coaxer. And this lady was like, oh my God, that's beautiful. I'll give you £5 for it. And I worked out, I was like, I'm on like 40 pence an hour. So I was like, absolutely not. But then what I started doing over lockdown, which worked really, really well. I do a Friday market. So I went live on Instagram, talked through 10 spoons, and it was always 10 spoons I'd offer. And then I'd say, right, okay, they're going to, you know, go live at midday. And I would just sell 10 on a Friday, you know, and it's very different to a market in person. You know, people just paid the asking price and they got shipped off all over the place. But I realized that I don't like that kind of, I don't know. I just don't like selling them. I don't like parting with them. And I think for me, keeping them has been really important in the design evolution and design process as well.
Yeah.
So having, you know, there might be one spoon that I wouldn't consider anywhere near my best, but there'd be a particular little detail at the bottom, or, you know, the way that the handle transitions to the neck is a really comfortable shape that sits on your middle finger. And I thought, right, okay, so it's really important that I keep that, because you wouldn't get those nuances from a photograph or even a video. You know, you need to have, you know, they're very tactile things. You need to handle them.
Mm.
So having these things as references, and in particular for me, I think my, you know, I've gone down this rabbit hole with the really small, like eating pocket spoons. And considering, you know, that a spoon is only, you know, a basic three elements for me, which is, you know, the handle, the neck and the bowl. And the fact that the shape is so small and I can start off with the same template shape, but yeah, you know, the variations in that one shape alone, you know, is enough to keep me out of trouble for weeks and weeks. And I think, you know, keeping these things and being able to see a progression, be able to refer back to an old spoon that's got a really lovely element, wherever it may be. That's been really important, I think, in the development of my work as well, is, you know, holding on to these things and using them as reference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, I can totally see that. I've had the same thing looking at some of the spoons hanging around, and some spoons at the time I didn't think was anything special, but going back for another look, like, this, and it wasn't, there's one particular spoon with a nice sweep, and it wasn't something like I planned. I don't plan so much my spoons. It's a bit of what comes out on the day. Sometimes I have more of an idea, but this particular spoon was just another one. But yeah, for some reason, the swoop on top, the top profile. So I'm like, exactly like you said, I'm keeping it because I look back at it and spurs me again. Okay, so then and then you kind of, do you often have a theme and you slowly develop it? Huh? It seems like I would say you have a particular style, right? Some people you wouldn't know, but some people really stand out. That's a Lee John Phillips spoon. You can see it, right? And although you've changed, no, you have the longer ones, you have the pocket spoons mostly.
Yeah.
It's mostly usually pretty obvious. So you kind of did develop your style. And was that something then that, yeah, like you're saying, just happened on its own, or were you looking for like that?
No, I obviously, you know, having a background in you know, the creative arts has been, you know, hugely influential in how my spoons look and into my approach to them as well. So I envy people who just sit down without a pencil just grab a random piece of wood and start hacking away, and then something beautiful appears. Because that's not me at all. You know, I'll start with drawing things out. I've got, I've been a sketchbook keeper for a long time, so I've got, you know, loads and loads of doodles of spoons and shapes and for me, you know, it's important that all of my kind of design work all starts just with a pencil and paper. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter what I do, you know, whether I'm kind of, you know, designing a workshop or a logo or a spoon, it all starts with the same kind of process, you know, with, you know, quick thumbnails and then they kind of pad out and grow. And I've some people ask me, you know, oh, do you kind of go with the natural kind of, you know, wave of the wood grain? I'm like, no way. I've drawn a spoon. I've gone to the effort of drawing it. I want to make the spoon that I've drawn and designed. So quite often I find myself kind of fighting against the wood almost, because I want it to do what I tell it to, and not just, and I do really envy the people who make these lovely kind of, you know, organic whimsical shapes. So I was at the bull gathering last September, and I was chatting with another carver there, Felix, and he was saying that he wanted to do the opposite. His are all really playful and whimsical, beautiful carvings. You know, he's a very accomplished carver, but he wanted to chase this more kind of this just tighter, more design style. Whereas, and I was saying, oh my God, I want to do the opposite. You know, I want to kind of embrace the kind of the whimsy. So you know, we both said that, you know, we're going to try now this year. I'm going to attempt to do things more playful and whimsical, and he's going to attempt to tighten up. And then we're going to come back together this coming September in the bowl gathering, just so we can have a little chat to see how our work has progressed with that focus in mind. But even though, you know, I know in my mind I want to kind of embrace this whimsy, I can't, and I don't know whether it's the kind of, you know, it's the technical illustrator in me, you know, I struggle with this kind of the playfulness. Mm-hmm. So mine always just tend to, even if the shapes start off being a little, you know, I think having, you know, more flowing lines and curves is, you know, I associate that with being more whimsical, looking at the spoons I've made in the past. But then the chip carving comes in and all that kind of playfulness goes out the window. And I just kind of zone in, everything becomes tight again. And my body tightens up and the spoon tightens up. So I just think I've just got to, you know, that's what's in me. And it's, I can't fight against it. You know, I can try and have a little bit of a play, but at the end of the day, it's, that's, you know, that's me, and it's the work that I do on paper or on screen. You know, just tends, I tend to favor that kind of, that technical tightness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess. A type of style will emerge if you keep carving long enough, right?
Yeah,
and it can be absolutely more exact, but a type of style will emerge, and it doesn't have to be like the same kind of spoon each time. Your style could be more, more whimsical, like you say, this or that. But it's nice. I like the idea you said, just of paying attention. Hey, all my spoons are this style. Let's go to the other extreme just to try it out. You know, if you're only doing stubby pocket spoons, let's try longer forms. If you're only doing one bowl shape, let's reverse the bowl and have a look at that. So it's kind of, interesting to look at ways how to kind of get out of your pattern, so to speak, to spur a bit of creativity, new ideas. There's some people, like, you could come up with a project, right? I was thinking, how can we kind of spur creativity trying something new? I mean, sometimes it's easier to stay with what you know, right? You get good at this and you stay with what you know, and it can, you know, if you try something new, it might go horribly wrong a few times, and it's a type of risk, I guess you could say. It's not a real risk, but sometimes it can feel like it. And then there's ways to kind of get us out of that by taking on some sort of project, an idea. One thing comes to mind is the spoon challenge on Rise Up, you know, carving people's templates would be a perfect way to do it. Do you have any other ideas that come to mind, like for someone to, I want to try something new, but I don't know what, how to kind of spark your creativity? Yeah. I don't know.
I think starting with a pen and paper.
Yeah.
You know, and just doodle. I don't have them here, so shame. It's at the top of the in the workshop. But you know, I'd have one double page in a sketchbook, and I might have like 60 different spoon drawings, different spoon designs, you know, on one page.
Yeah, wow.
Some of them were tiny little kind of like, you know, 20 mil, you know, 5 second scamps, or you know, some of them were, you know, 1-to-1 scale, and you know, I thought a little bit more about form and the, you know, varying profiles. So I think really kind of, you know, to really push the design element, yeah, go back to kind of pencil and paper, you know, and I think a lot of people, you know, and this has been an art educator for, you know, about 20 years, you know, people are not keen, if they're not natural drawers, they're not keen to allow other people to see these kind of background studies. And I was like, you know, and I think it's great, you know, keep them to yourself. You don't need to show them. They don't need to go on Instagram. You know, just remove that pressure. You know, these little pages are only for you and for nobody else. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think, you know, having that freedom, because, you know, we do have, you know, with Instagram, you know, the carving community and the illustration, you know, you want to show your work, and there's that kind of pressure to feed the Instagram beast, isn't it? You know, it's a game. So, but I think if you remove that pressure, that these things are not going to be seen by anybody other than me. And when I finished, I'll just, you know, close the book, put them in a drawer, you know, they'll be top secret. But, you know, but out of these, you know, this page of, you know, really rough doodles, you know, I've had some incredibly important sort of design leaps from the smallest little, you know, quickest sketch. But, you know, there's something in there when you're kind of, you know, when you're free up and you're not too worried about maybe like, you know, how this thing will translate into wood, whether it will be ergonomic. You know, you're just looking at design. And wonderful things have happened in my illustration career as well, just from the smallest, briefest little sketch.
Mm-hmm.
And I use this a lot in my teaching. The designer Milton Glaser, who did the I Love New York, the original logo. You know, that was a really quick biro sketch on a napkin in the back of a taxi, apparently. You know, there's a photograph of this napkin. You know, and it just goes to show, you know, the importance of the most basic, simplest of studies of, you know, of gestures, or, you know, whatever, they, you know, they can be just as important as some, you know, wonderfully rendered design. So my advice, sorry, I've been rambling, but yeah, it would be go back to pen and paper.
Yep. Absolutely. Yep. And it's the speed of it, right? And the kind of ease to try anything. It takes very little time, and you can try really crazy ideas, you know, you can try anything in a little matter of time, and it might spur something, like you say. Just by trying. I mean, sometimes I get the idea just like the I have it, and that's nice when it comes, you know, that kind of inspiration from nowhere, and then you race out and do it. It's really a good feeling when that comes, but often you got to start doing something, right?
And you've got to work for it. Mm-hmm. You know, that, you know, those sparks of inspiration, like you said, you know, they are great when they happen, but you know, 95% of the time you've just got to put the work in, and there's no substitute for that work that goes on in the background, you know.
Yeah.
And there are so many spoons that I've made, but it's got to be like hundreds of spoons now that have never seen the light of day, you know, that there's kind of like I'm slightly embarrassed about. You know, loads go on the fire, you know, if there's something, if they've had a tear out or there's a little crack. But there's, you know, I've got loads of finished spoons, which I can't show anybody. I've just got in a locked toolbox in the back of the shed. I don't want to burn them because of the amount of time that's been in there, but I don't want anybody to see them either. So it's like my little guilty secrets box.
I'm sure they're awesome too.
But it just goes to show, you know, there's loads of work that goes on, like, you know, behind the scenes, you know, with the spoon carving and you know, in particular the illustration stuff. You know, there'll be the amount of work that I'll do in preparation for a logo and illustration is always far greater than the the time and effort that goes into the final execution of the bit that people see.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, and again, there's so much that I've got that I just can't share on Instagram, which is a real shame.
Yeah. What, and then you can't share it until what it comes out, until it's used.
Yeah.
And then normally they're fine for you.
Yeah, that's
as
right,
the
yeah.
designer to show it. Okay.
But then, but you know, as I'm working, I get, you know, more jobs come in, and then they are secret, and then the next job will come along. So I almost kind of forget to go, right, okay, this is what I've been working on for the last kind of, you know, X number of months. So I've got, I'm just waiting on some visuals to come through and a contract for the next book that I've done. I've not authored it, but it's a guy, Dominic Chinier, from the Repair Shop on TV. So I recently illustrated a book for him, the history of tools. And there's, I obviously I can't even share what it's about, but there's another book coming out,
tools,
in that series ish. So it's, yes. Yeah, so that's going to keep me occupied now for months and months. So, you know, as far as my Instagram is concerned, you know, which is my, you know, public profile. I don't do any other social media. I just keep it there. You know, people just think I make spoons and play with a dog. But my 9 to 5, but it's normally 9 till 7, is, you know, locked up in my little studio in town. And I even have to, like, because I'm in a big public building, and I'm overlooking the main high street, which is fantastic.
Okay, yep.
Fantastic for people watching. So I even, doesn't matter what the weather's like, I draw the blinds, I've got blackout blinds. I have to be in this little kind of cocoon, you know, so completely blocked off from the outside. Even though I'm there on my own, you know, I've got noise cancelling headphones on, I've got the blinds drawn, you know, and I'm just kind of, 9-10 hours in front of the drawing board or screen. So it's...
Wow. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I kind of imagined it a bit more romantic out on the beach somehow, like,
oh yeah,
drawing on your sketchbook, and maybe you've got that part of it too. But
yeah,
the work...
that is. But like a lot of the book projects, you know, there's so, you know, smaller client work. Like I did the part of the rebranding team for Kettle Chips Crisps.
Yeah.
So they've now got little illustrations, top right, bottom left. And the majority of those illustrations I did when I was away in the van, or I did in kind of hotels, and I was doing my other kind of job in education. So jobs like that I can do more remotely, but then mm-hmm. when large book projects comes up, you know, there's the only thing I can do is just kind of hide away, shut myself off from everybody and everything. And then it's just, you know, head down.
Yeah,
and there's no substitute for the, you know, actually putting that kind of time in. So I often, and the good thing about having a dog, I have to get up and walk, whereas mm-hmm. I would just sit there, and you know, I'll eat as I'm working. So you know, I never stop for a lunch break, I never stop for a break. You know, you just kind of sit down and graft until it's time to go home, and then I realize, shit, I haven't moved for moved for 6 hours, and it's really unhealthy for me. So, and I've got fantastic repetitive strain from the drawing, and the carving isn't helping, but it is a different action and activity, and I think that's why the carving works really well as a nice balance,
mm-hmm.
because there's more of there's more activity involved. You know, I've got to go out and source the wood. You know, I'm cutting, I'm sawing, I'm chopping. So all those kind of things is. It's just nice to move, you know, which is I move from the elbow down in my job.
So. Yeah. Yeah, the images are very cool, but at least you get, like, sounds cool with the different clients and different jobs. You get a bit of variation, although, yeah, you're still sitting there. You, yeah, get different ideas and different challenges through it. The kettle chips, yeah, I saw you post that. I thought, oh, that's pretty cool. Just because for me, you know, I know the product, and
yeah,
it's kind of cool, I guess, if you get to see some of your work out in the real life. Some of it maybe you never see, you know. I don't know if it's logos for some business, but with the kettle chips, you really...
Yeah, there is quite a lot that kind of, it's all consuming for that kind of 2 weeks, and then it disappears and I never see it again.
Yeah.
So to have something that, you know, I'm really pleased with, there was a really lovely kind of team of people involved with it. So it was a nice job. And yeah, as you said, you get to see it in the shops. Mm-hmm. That's kind of nice.
What's your thoughts? Have you thought about it much with the whole, lots of people talking about AI the last months, and it's a bit of a topic, and I'm like much more of a outdoor doing things people than sort of a computer type of person, but still, you know, you hear about it. And someone in your profession as an illustrator, it will be a thing to think about, no? How it's going to change things. I just saw recently Adobe Lightroom came out with an editing program where you can take an image and rather than doctor it yourself and edit it yourself, you can just type in commands like, I want this photo to be in winter, and it will process it and make the whole winter. I want there to be a horse on the side, and then, you know, it's the AI will just do that from the typed in commands. I'm like, that's crazy. So literally, you don't need to know the skills of how to program and how to edit images and photos if this is the way it's going. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are, someone in that world.
It's terrifying. but I think that the human connection, and when I have sit and chat with clients, there's nothing going to kind of replace that, really. And I think, I sort of liken it really to kind of stock images and stock logos. You know, even now, like somebody can pay X amount of money and get, a cheap illustration of something from, that's a kind of a clip art, that's an unlicensed image. And that's fine. If that's for them, great. But then, there'll be other clients and publishers who, they don't want something that's done by, something that's from a stock library. Yeah. They want something that's kind of, custom to them. And I suppose you can argue that AI can do that. But then, a lot of the illustrations I've done are like sort of based on tools because of my shed project. And people don't just want an image of a tool. They want an image of the tool that's drawn by the shed guy. Mm-hmm. So, I think having that kind of quite often, they want the person and the product to be one. And I think if you remove the person and you just have the product, it might be fine for some people. But, I think some clients, there's always going to be a place for us. I'm not worried that I'm going to kind of lose work to a computer at all, because I just liken it to stock images, and these things are out there, but people still want me to do the work because it's me. So that sounded a bit egotistical, but they want the person as well, and I think that's really important. And and it'd be really interesting to sort of see the AI stuff develop, especially when it comes to things that are meant to look hand drawn and have that human element, how they'll, how they can compete with that element, because a lot of the things I've seen are quite slick and glossy and airbrushed looking. So it'd be interesting to see how they can compete just with the hand drawn and that human element in any work, really. Terrifying.
It is. But I'm thinking maybe it'll be like someone, the human connection will probably still be there, but maybe it'll become more the person is giving the proper prompts for the AI to make it.
You might
become like a middleman type of thing. And I mean, that's probably going to be one's choice to use it or not.
Yeah.
But that might become something, because you still will have, well, not you particularly, but maybe other people still will have a good eye for something's not quite right. Let's try add a bit of this or change this. So there might still be, might become like for some people, like a middleman role, photographer that still has the eye can make little changes rather than them going directly to AI. But it's It's fascinating, but I it was funny because we were on there with a chat GTP where you can ask it questions, and I was like, what did I say? What makes a great spoon? I asked. AI. And then I was like, and I was quite impressed. I've got it here. I'll read it out. And I was like, there are many reasons someone might want to carve a spoon. Here are a few. Creative expression. For many people, carving a spoon is a way to express their creativity and artistic vision. Spoon carving can be a very meditative and satisfying process, allowing the carver to connect with the wood and bring their own unique style and personality to each piece. I was like, ooh, that's good.
Yeah, like, okay.
Good answer. Practicality. Carving a spoon can also be a practical skill to have. A well-made wooden spoon can be used for cooking, eating, serving food, and can be more sustainable and eco-friendly than disposable plastic utensils. So, good point.
Okay.
Tradition. Spoon carving has a long history in many cultures around the world, and for some people, carving a spoon can be a way to connect with and honor these traditions. I agree with that. Sustainability. Using locally sourced wood to carve spoons can be a sustainable practice as it reduces the need for mass-produced disposable utensils and promotes the use of renewable resources. And the last one, mindfulness. Carving a spoon can be a way to slow down and be present in the moment, practicing mindfulness and connecting with the natural world. And so I was quite impressed with that answer.
Yeah, but it's like an undergraduate student has written a paper on it. It's like, someday I'm going to research this topic, and then I'm going to tell you about it.
Yeah,
and it's like anybody can do that, but I think, you know, unless you sit down and have a, you know, a proper chat with another spoon carver around the fire at a little festival, you know, it's, you know, the answer is going to be more genuine and more real, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Those are all words, and that's like. Yeah. It's spoon carvers. I can really, I can connect with some of them, but unless you're doing the thing, it's just words and, you know, it's just numbers. But it's still missing the actual what it's talking about. I was quite impressed with how it spoke, but.
It reminds me of the scene in Good Will Hunting where Robin Williams is talking to Matt Damon. Who's just, you know, reciting things that he's read in a book because he's got this incredible photographic memory. And Robin Williams said, but you'll never know what it's like to be in love. You'll never know what it's like, you know, to lose a friend in battle. You know, or, you know, you don't have those memories based on action. You just have a photographic memory. And I think that it's really comparable that, you know, experience is removed. And then, you know, just going back to AI generated, you know, images, having that kind of human element removed, I think, you know, there are going to be people who are always going to want to kind of, you know, retain that kind of human element. And yeah, and long may that last.
Yeah. Yeah. There might even be a kind of pushback going more some kind into of that, realizing we can spend so much time online and it just doesn't it's just not the same. But yeah, interesting to see where it'll go and things. So I wanted to ask you about your spoons. Yeah, definitely kind of a unique style where you can see your type of spoon. I've seen other people like carving or trying to carve your kind of spoon. What are your thoughts about that? Like with your kind of intellectual property people?
This is a minefield.
Yeah. Because I've seen definitely your spoons, and I've seen people like write about it and say, yeah, I'm doing a Lee John Phillips spoon and cool. And then I've seen other people post quite a lot of that type of spoon with absolutely no mention. And I'm quite like, I don't know if I want to type something. That's not my job or my position to kind of defend other people, but yeah.
That's the really tricky bit. And, you know, I chat with lots of people, lots of carvers on Instagram who are kind of in the same boat where, you know, things, people are not given, you know, credit where they should do. And, you know, I offered, one of my templates through the Spoon Crank, which is kind of, you know, great. You know, I like what Daya's doing there. And I liken it to when I taught art, let's say we were looking at still life. We'd be looking at some of Picasso's still lives, and there's room for pastiche. So we get the students to essentially just copy an image, a Picasso still life, but all we were interested in, as you know, from a teacher's point of view, is that I wanted the students to get used to handling oil pastels, for example, or a particular material. So if you're just copying something, you almost remove the thought and the procrastination time. So all you're doing is essentially learning to use the material. And I consider the template as the same, that you're just, you're removing that, need to understand ergonomics or proportion or design. All you're doing is practicing carving the wood and removing wood. And I think that's where kind of, the templates really work, because, and I think I wish I'd had them when I started carving. So it took me, a considerable number of eating spoons until I was like, right, okay, the bowl has to be this shallow, or, and I think, it has its place. But then I've had people send me like screenshots of other carvers' posts, and these guys have got like a market stall full of my spoon designs, and they're selling them, and it's making them a living, and I'm not getting a mention at all. And I think, okay, well, I put the templates out there, that's fine, that's me allowing these people to use them. But then I've seen carvers' market tables where it's just, it's all my spoon designs.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of hurts a little bit. And I'll just kind of shuffle up to the shed and mutter and swear under my breath and there we are. It is what it is.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that I don't sell my spoons either means there's not many of them out there. So it's kind of, it is a nice way for that design to be out there, even if it's not the spoon I've carved myself.
Mm.
But I don't know. I know it's caused lots of problems for lots of carvers, and I think it will do forevermore. But you see it with, I think, any creative industry. I've seen lots of illustration work that's kind of based on my shed project. And it's like, it's a blatant kind of aesthetical ripoff of what I've spent, tens of thousands of hours doing. But then, it's a tough one.
Yeah, it's hard to know, right? If you should hit them up about it, if you did confront and say, hey, I'm still wondering if these people, if it even enters their mind. I'm very much, I copy a lot of people's work. I did it recently with a Cookser. I did it with your spoon. I did it with Rachel Bainton. Like, everyone's stuff I copy, but I'm like, okay, well, I'm not, mass producing. I'm not selling. And then, hey, I got to give credit. I feel like it's obvious I've got to say that, but I'm wondering these people, if it doesn't even enter their mind, and if somebody hit them up about them, would they say, oh yeah, I didn't think about it, or not? I'm not sure, but yeah.
Yeah. I posted something, it must have been about 2 years ago, where I had a scrap of really lovely birch, and I don't normally like carving birch, but it was from a field belonging to my late great uncle. And I was like, I obviously have to make something from this because of the familial links. Mm-hmm. But there was hardly any crank, so I had to make a spoon that I wouldn't normally make, just so I could get something out of that bit of wood. And I'm not going to kind of drop any names or anything, but I post something online, and I said, this doesn't look like my normal spoons because I've had the limitations of this wood, because this wood is so kind of, it has these links with my family and heritage. I said, but if it looks like a spoon by this person, this person, or this person, then it probably will have influence because I like the work of these people. And it was a spoon that was sort of based on a little plastic childhood spoon that's in my parents' kitchen. And it was like I just lit the blue touch paper and stepped away. It went absolutely bonkers. And I saw like fractures in the kind of carving community. And this one design, even though I'd given somebody else some credit, apparently that person, the ripples were really kind of wide reaching. And I ended up having to take the post down because I was like, you know, it was like it caused gossip and I was like, I don't want any part of this. You know, I'm stating that if it looks like a spoon by one of these people, it's because I like their work and I'm influenced by them.
Yeah.
But yeah, the whole kind of you know, intellectual property game is a tricky one.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that I don't really know. Is. But then I think that will happen forever in whatever kind of, you know, the creative subjects. You know, you'll always get that kind of pastiche. But I think for me, when people are, you know, like you said yourself, you know, I'm going to have a go at making one of these spoons that belongs to this person.
Yeah.
Tag them in. Thanks for the inspiration. Brilliant. And then move on. But when, you know, that's your kind of sole kind of product that you're selling, then I'm thinking, oh, it's not sitting too well.
Next, they'll be. I haven't seen it. I know you do a maker's mark, right? You've got and you do it on all your spoons.
Yeah, but I've even seen people put my maker's mark in as well.
And it's that's got to make it authentic, an authentic.
Yeah.
So, oh, geez.
Yeah, so it's a career in counterfeit spoons.
Yeah.
But I think my maker's mark will evolve as well. And I can, like one of the toughest branding jobs I've ever done is for me and, you know, and my company. And that's kind of, and it's changed and evolved so much. Yes, this is by far the most difficult job. And I think my maker's mark has been the same thing, you know, because I can control change, I will change. So, I think my maker's mark will evolve, and I think it's going to kind of come in line with, you know, the rest of my business, which is evolving as well. So I'm in the process now of selling my property to buy some woodland to have a kind of a purpose built kind of workshop teaching space for forest schools, and, you know, just have a venue that, you know, I can host people, and people come to me for carving lessons rather than me having to, you know, drive out to all these different venues and, you know, take all my chopping blocks and pack the van, and, you know, which is I really enjoy it, but it's exhausting, you know. Yeah. So just to have that kind of purpose built venue, that's really exciting.
Yeah, that sounds cool. Yeah. Will you plan to live there and have a house or some accommodation, or just the property?
No, in Wales, the type of sort of woodland it is, you can't have a residential. But I've got the motorhome, so we've, you know, it'll be, I'll put a, you know, a proper hookup for the van and everything, but it'll be you know, a purpose built workshop teaching space, which is very excited about. So touch wood, it's in the hands of the solicitors at the moment. So
That'll be very cool. Yeah, so more just give you more options, like you say, for workshops, events, hosting things, people coming to you. You're teaching, when did you start teaching the green woodwork, the spoon carving? And this, I know you're doing soon a chip carving workshop there. And that's cool,
in London.
In the UK, I guess that's a place where there is quite a lot of interest in it, right? So you can hold these events and get people showing up, which is really cool.
It's been grand. And the, you know, it's still not for another sort of 5 weeks or so, and all the tickets have almost gone already for 2 full days. You know, awesome. So that's really nice. I'm looking forward to carving, to teaching chip carving, just because of the ease of carrying all the equipment. You know, it's very different to carrying like axe blocks and, you know, axes and all the tools. Whereas this, I've got the kit down to kind of just 8 little pencil cases that has everything in. So it's, so I can travel much lighter with that than spoon carving. But yeah, so that's the, let me see. It was way before COVID. So I started with my property was on Airbnb, and I'd offer, you know, if you want to have a, you know, you want to pay and have a little spoon carving lesson as well, then, you know, that's fine. And I'd go to my property and we'd do it in the garden. So I taught lots of people and lots of families and couples, and it was a really lovely thing to kind of teach that in on my backyard. So that must have been, yeah, that was well before COVID. So we're talking maybe four and a half years. Mm-hmm. I've been teaching it now.
Wow.
Yeah, and I've taught at sort of you know, loads of festivals, galleries, coffee shops. Yeah, there's lots of venues that have hosted it, and I do really enjoy it. I do really enjoy it. Yeah. And I hadn't realised that I enjoy teaching as much as I do, because I taught for so long and I hated the job while I was there. It wasn't the teaching I hated; it was the, you know, the bureaucracy of education, you know, and pressures from senior management and not being trusted and left to your own devices to do the best for the students in front of you, you know? Mm. So, you know, so teaching carving means I get the best of both worlds. You know, I get to do the teaching bit, which I didn't know that I really enjoyed, you know, and I teach, and I say to the guys on my courses, I've made this course the one I wish I did when I'd started carving.
So this chip carving course?
Oh no, just spoon carving in general.
Okay, how you teach it. Yep. What you wish you had when you started. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I thought that was a really nice way to approach it, and what, you know, what you should know, you know, about the tools and the wood selection, and you know, it's a really intensive day, and I find it's a hell of a lot to kind of to pack in and cover in one full day.
Yeah,
then, you know, people ask me, you know, can you do you know, a 1 hour spoon carving course?
Yeah.
And obviously you just kind of, you know, you tailor it to suits. But but my beginners 1 dayer is absolutely knackering. It's really exhausting.
How many hours then would it be for a 1 day?
The last one I did is maybe a half an hour drive, and I'm out from 7 in the morning till 7 at night.
Yeah.
You know, and that's then doesn't take into consideration, you know, me going to get the wood in the first place and then, you know, looking after the tools the other end. So, yeah, they're long, exhausting days. But, yeah, they're really rewarding. I love it. And, you know, I still regularly get, like, I call them ex-students. So, you know, students who've been on my courses and, you know, they send me pictures of spoons that they've made recently and asking for advice on tools or... And I think that's a really lovely, for me, it really scratches that teaching itch.
Yeah.
And I think I really enjoy seeing progression. So it has got quite tedious just doing the same introduction to spoon carving over and over and over. You know, I like having maybe like, you know, at least a kind of a 2 day event where, you know, you can, it gives you time and the students time to see progression. So when I've got people come back and say, oh my God, you know, I've been doing this now for a month and look at this spoon compared to the one I made with you. And I think that's really, really lovely is to know that you've sparked something. You know, and I know how important spoon carving has been, you know, for me and my well-being. And it's really lovely to get the opportunity to pass that on because, you know, that's going to help people, you know, with their own kind of mental health. And mm-hmm. that's not why I went into it in the first place, but you know, it's a very, very lovely kind of I don't know. It's been the whole spoon carving thing has been, you know, just completely life changing. Mm-hmm. You know, and it sounds a little bit ridiculous or a little bit kind of cheesy, but you know, the fact that now I'm looking at, as I said, selling my house to buy woodland, you know, that's not a normal hobby. You know,
it escalated to this. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
What starts as this little try and carve a spoon for your nana is like snowballed, eh? it's funny, eh? Where it
would have thought.
But that's the thing. Just do stuff, try stuff, get out, go outside, do things, and you never know where it leads to, eh? What?
No, never, ever.
Going to the chip carving a little bit, yeah, so you're gonna teach beginners, what advice would you have for just now someone? It's something I tried a little bit, but it was something I don't know, I didn't have a natural knack for it, like I struggled a bit with it. I also went a bit more to the coal rosing path where I could draw, and with the chip carving you need a bit of a system, right? If you want it to be symmetrical, nice and clean. And this to me was a bit like, I don't know, a bit tedious to set it all out and lay it all out. But if you want it to end up nice, that's part of it, I guess.
Yeah. And I think for me, the chip carving really kind of lends itself to the kind of illustration work that I do.
Yeah.
Which is very regimented, very kind of structured and ordered. So, you know, and a lot of people said that, you know, I'm slightly on the spectrum, which is absolutely fine. You know, it's kind of, you know, I'll embrace that. But it's so I did a course with Peter Kovacs chip carving last September. But even though I'd done a lot on my spoons before, we just did this on just flat tablets of wood, and it was. And it was really lovely. It's a very different thing to chip carving a spoon. Mm. So when I'm chip carving my spoons, a lot of the time, you know, I'm actually holding it in both hands with it. You know, this is flat on the, you know, on the table. But I think that it's almost two different things. Chip carving on something flat like that and chip carving on a spoon are very different, because you can, on the flat tablet, you can, you know, draw these things out with a ruler, and it's all really neat. Where when I'm bringing that back to my spoon handles, quite often, like the ruler, because there's so much crank in there, and the top surface is either concave or convex, you know, you can't just put a ruler on it and draw as you normally would on a flat tablet. So I really love, and I think that the only way to do it properly on a spoon handle, in particular to the type of spoons that I make, is you've got to kind of freehand it on, because there's kind of, you know, you can't put any guides on these things to a certain degree. You know, and the spoon handle varies in width. So, you know, you can't just, if you measure something out, you know, the measurements could be accurate to the millimeter, but because the width of the spoon handle varies, it just looks wrong. Mm-hmm. So you've really just got to kind of go in freehand, freestyle it. But it just suits my way of working.
Yeah.
But I think one of the most kind of helpful bits of kit, I've got an old jeweler's sandbag. You know, the little circular leather sandbag.
And like a little pouch, a little leather pouch. I can't quite imagine it.
It's here.
Yep. And so that's like a pancake type leather thing. Is that for working jewelry on, or what is it?
Yeah, yeah. Yep. So it just means it's a really lovely way to kind of, obviously, to support the spoon, because the spoon won't lay flat on a, you know, on a table or a wooden surface, because, and again, especially with mine, because they've got so much crank on them.
Yeah.
You know, this sandbag works wonders to kind of almost like push the spoon to fully support it, uh-huh. You know, while you're kind of carving. So I used to use just like an old bobble hat or a tea towel rolled up, you know, just to kind of hold the work. But these sandbags, it's perfect for that task.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're amazing. Amazing.
And then would you like, again, draw it first flat on paper to get kind of what you want to have, and then transfer that onto the handle?
a few times, and I think one of my most successful ones, I'd drawn the template on screen, so I'd drawn the template digitally. Because a lot of the work I do is digital, so I've been using programs like Illustrator for years. So I drew this spoon up in Illustrator to print out a template, and then I thought, well, while I'm here, I may as well draw the chip carving pattern. So I drew that, and then printed that, kind of traced it on, and it is a very successful, in my opinion, it's a very successful rendition of what I designed digitally. Yeah. But more often than not, I'll kind of see, like, what the shape of the spoon is, because when you're drawing things flat, my spoons are very rarely flat, so sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes I just go straight onto the spoon itself, and see what works. But what I've been doing recently, I've been taking photographs of the spoons and putting them onto my iPad and drawing on top of the spoon photograph.
Okay.
And that seems, and I'm thinking, I've had this software for as long as I've been, longer than I've been making spoons. And it's only like these last couple of months that I've actually been doing that. And I'm thinking, why the hell didn't I do that before? It makes complete sense, because it gives you more of an idea of the contours of the spoon. So you're not just drawing something flat, you're physically drawing on top of a two-dimensional rendition of a three-dimensional object. Yeah. And and what I find is drawing over the photograph like that, when it comes to do the chip carving, it feels like I've already done the chip carving on that spoon.
Uh-huh.
If you know what I mean?
Because you can already kind of see it. No, you can already envision it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so it's worked really, really well. So I use Procreate on the iPad, mm-hmm. and it does a very, very good job.
Yeah, so interesting. Yeah, there's so many different ways to kind of get at it, right? For someone starting out, that's like, would you say that wants to get better? I don't know, because I love it too, the chip carving that you do. I think it looks awesome, and Andrea and some other other people doing the chip carving. I love it on the spoon. The permanence of it too is in regard compared to maybe colorizing, which wears off over time. I really like the permanence and that it's part of the spoon as the decoration, especially if you do the back of the handle too, like decorating the whole thing. Like you said, I think you said it becomes more of a sculpture.
Yeah, I just finished this one the day before yesterday, and this was designed to be silly.
It's
totally unnecessary. But I think, as far as kind of advice goes, it would just be to have that kind of repetition. Yeah. And, so that's why it's good to start practicing on these kind of flat boards. And I think it's just to almost become like a machine. Or a robot, and just go over and just do the same process over and over and over and over, and I think that just kind of lends itself nicely then. So when you come over to a spoon, you might not do as many as you would do on a practice board or on a flat panel, but I think it's just having that muscle memory, so you get the same angles consistently mm-hmm. with all of your stab cuts, so all the same angles. And then and keeping the knife at the same angle is much easier to do when you're working on a flat board. But then things change when you bring it to the spoon. Like I said earlier, it's not flat. It's not on the it's not on your desk. Quite often, the carves I'll do, it has to be in my hand. So it's very difficult. Then you almost have to rethink the cutting direction, because you're not just on a flat surface. This is concave. It's almost like the handle sometimes of mine gets bowled. So the cutting direction on a flat board would be slightly different to the cutting direction on a spoon, because you're not just carving on along a surface. You're carving through annular rings.
Yeah.
So it does start to become almost a different a different task when you move.
Yeah, the question is how much does that on the flat board help? Because like you say, it's similar, but also it is, you have to be willing to mess it up too, right? That's one thing. It's like, oh, I don't want to even attempt too much because I'll muck it up. But yeah.
Yeah,
I know that's the wrong way to...
I was chatting with somebody last night actually on Instagram about it, and they were saying that, you know, they were worried about spending all this time doing a really lovely spoon and ruining it. And I just think, you know, that's why the, you know, those flat tablets are great. So I've got so many like scraps of wood like this lying around that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a podcast, nobody else is going to see this. but yeah, so you know, I've got lots of those lying around, and there's no real time put into creating that as it would be a spoon, so it's quite nice to have lots of scraps. And I know Dan Lawrence calls them sketch blocks.
Yeah,
so it's like sketchbooks. You just got little kind of chunks of wood, you know, with all of these little kind of, you know, potential patterns on them, you know. And I think that's a great way to start. So, you know, similarly, as I said earlier, you know, all my design work spoons will start pen and paper. And I think, you know, for chip carving, working on that flat surface, you know, it's like using your pen and paper, but it is one step removed, I think, from working there on a, you know, on a spoon, and one that particularly has like a lot of crank. Yeah, there's a lot more thinking involved.
What's your favorite type of wood for carving spoons and for chip carving? Is there one you'd also you'd recommend?
Oh, I really love beech.
Yeah.
Because I lean towards the tougher woods. You know, and that's not from, you know, a kind of a macho point of view. It's just I quite like a wood that offers a bit of resistance. And pushes back, because I find I can, you know, my first cut can be a final cut. You know, I don't have to kind of, you know, constantly refine it. And I think, you know, really nice. I quite like the plainer the beech, the better for me. Because I find if you've got stuff that's got a bit of spalting or something that's quite busy, it can be quite difficult to kind of, you know, cut your faceted lines in properly because of the surface, you know, appearing to look busy. So I like really plain beech.
Plain beech.
Yeah, just,
you know. And does the hardness also lend itself to the chip carving itself for the same reason, to get those cleaner cuts? Is it easier with a harder wood?
I find it, yeah, on the spoons. Now, I've been using what I've got for practice boards is... I've been cutting boards myself from wood that I've planked from, you know, from woodland, you know, and then kind of sanding or planing. But then I've been buying from art suppliers. It's wood for wood block printing, and the stuff that I've got at the moment is Magnolia.
Okay.
Which is really soft, really clean, really lovely for a flat board, because it's meant to be, you know, inked and printed, but works really well for chip carving. But I wouldn't really want to carve a spoon out of it. So I really like the denser ones. I love beech, holly, anything that starts getting a little bit kind of, you know, soft, leaning towards kind of, you know, birch or sycamore, I tend to kind of stray away from. I just like, and as well, because the spoons that I make are meant to be robust. You know, they're meant to be either kept in your pocket or in your backpack to take to the beach, or so I think my spoons started to be like, and I think Barnes said they were more like bushcraft spoons to start with, and that's exactly what they were, because we do a lot of I don't live far from the beach, so we do a lot of kind of cooking and stuff down at the beach. So they were made for a specific purpose, the kind of the longer handled eating spoons that you can cook with and stir with, and they work as spatulas and all of that kind of stuff. So that's where my my spoon design started being something that I camped with. And then I was at a festival, and I trud on one of them, and they broke it. It was my favorite spoon. It had been with me for a long time. It traveled with me, and I was like, well, it looks really nice. It does its job for this camping, serving all rounder, but it's not really. I wouldn't like put it in my pocket. If I kind of sat on it, it would break. So that's when these littler pocket spoons, these stubby ones, the design came from the necessity for these things to be robust. So, yeah. You know, they're really, really, the ones that are really cranky, they're so strong because of how deep the neck is. You know, the top profile, they look quite kind of dainty, but these things, you can jack your car up with them. They're really, really tough spoons. So then, you know, my wood selection as well, I think, has been just always leaning towards, you know, will this survive in my pocket? And yeah. I've broken so many spoons having them in my pocket and kind of like sitting down on them going, oh well, that didn't work. And the last spoon I broke again is in my pocket, and the dog's ball went under the camper, so I'm like crawling under the camper. I'm kind of on my back, and then I just hear this in my pocket. I'm like, oh, there's another one. And it's like, it's almost like that's how I know if that design works or not.
Yeah.
If it snaps in my pocket. So, yeah, those small little stubby templates I've got, if the side profile is right and the wood selection is right, they're kind of bomb-proof, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's what I find. When it comes to copying that template of my smaller pocket spoons, people tend to get it's easier to get the top down profile right, but very few people get the side profile right. And that has been the most difficult thing, I think, for me to kind of understand, really, is that kind of side profile and getting, you know, the right amount of crank where, you know, it looks appealing, it's tough, but it still functions as a spoon and is comfortable to use. Mm-hmm. Which then comes back to full circle, where keeping hold of my spoons and having them as references, you know, help to kind of push this thing along in the direction where it needs to be, you know, functional, aesthetic, and hardy. And I didn't even know what your initial question was then. I do that.
it was about the actual wood type,
the wood,
beech, for harder woods. And yeah, they lend themselves to getting cleaner cuts for the chip carving too, and just the durability of it. Yeah, I prefer the harder woods too. Yeah, your spoons, that's when I think I started kind of seeing your work, was with those shorter pocket spoons with a lanyard, even some had.
Oh, yeah,
And like totally a real sculpture, because from the side, from the top, there's so much going on. I'd be fascinated to see how you do that. Is there anything, have you ever put any material out showing you working, going through that?
You know, I haven't. You know, a lot of people have asked, and I think for me, it's just a time thing.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm carving, I'm snatching my time.
Yeah.
And I don't have time to kind of sit down and, you know, edit and make sure that, you know, I'm in the right place, the lighting is right. I just don't have the time. You know, when I sit down and want to carve, and it sounds really, really selfish, but it's kind of, that's for me, that's my time. So I'm not adverse to doing it. It's just purely a logistical thing of not getting, you know, not getting the time. But I think for the really small stubby ones, the axing is really difficult. So I've got a very deep ledge right on the edge of a large chopping block, so that you know, a lot of all the force that goes in, you know, obviously comes back through the weight of the chopping block that's behind it. So
my
little ledge that I've cut in is so close to the edge of the block, you know, so I've got a huge chunk of wood that's behind it, you know, putting that force back in, and it's the action and creating that really you know, that really swoopy crank is the, I think, is the most important bit in that particular design. Is to remove that and almost having, so it almost, the blank almost looks like a seesaw, you know. So it's, yeah. And quite often they can look, I've made spoons that when you look at the blank, you can't even tell which is the bowl end and which is the handle end. They're almost symmetrical, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's, I think it's important getting that action right. And the only way I found it, as I said, is just to have that really big ledge with a lot of wood of the chopping block behind the axe. It's much, much easier. But yeah. I will one day.
Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah, see it maybe. But like you say, I'm the same sometimes. Yeah, it's just extra stuff to do. That would be a whole nother project, right? To film and edit and it.
Yeah.
Rather be carving the spoon.
and for me as well, you know, if I'm spending like all day at the screen,
yeah,
you know, I don't want anything to do with the screen, you know, other than just, you know, quickly, like, that's why I think the stories are really good. I find that I'm putting a lot more on stories on Instagram because it's instant, and it's not like the profile grid where I see that. You know, because of my art background, I see that as a portfolio almost, you know, and, you know, I won't just put anything there. I'm quite careful in even like the background I take my spoons on, because I think, oh, how will this look on the whole profile grid? Mm-hmm. And I tend to overthink things and then I go, I can't be asked. Whereas with a story, it's just, it disappears. It's instant. So I think I offer more and show more in my stories than I do on the rest of the Instagram.
Okay. Yeah.
Just because it's quick and I don't have to bloody think about it.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I've seen some people even set up a camera and film a bit of their process or while they're carving. That can be interesting. And yeah, like you say, it's just easy to do. But I haven't done it myself. I haven't shown any work or anything. I'm also just, here's a finished spoon, here's another one. Put it up there. But people with very particular styles and a lot of experience like yourself, it would be fascinating for me to see that. So if you do that sometime, I'll be happy to watch and take part. Oh, in.
Yeah, I will. I've been saying it for a long time, I will. But then I just get outside. I sit down outdoors and anything digital just goes out the window. You know? Yeah.
That's the nice thing. Hey, we've been chatting for a while. I think we'll kind of wrap up here. I'm going to take off for the Easter weekend with family. You've got a busy day. You told me you've got some projects and things. So thank you so much for taking the time. I've followed and admired your work since I saw it. I really, really, really love it. Maybe I'll get a chance to meet you someday somewhere, which would be really cool. Otherwise, wish you all the best and thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and you're welcome in West Wales, fella.
Yeah, great. Thank you, man. Thank you very much.
Lovely. Cheers, Simon. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to this episode. You can follow the work of Lee by finding him on Instagram at LeeJohnPhillips. If you want to connect with me, I'm also on Instagram at RootSpoons. Thank you very much, and happy carving.